The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
So I'm waiting on a call from Adam Strauss. He's the co-CEO and portfolio manager for Appleseed Capital. He's got some thoughts on ESG investing and commodities. ESG investing as an environmental, social, and governance principles apply to investing. And again, Adam Strauss has got some opinions about how ESG investing can be accomplished well, investing in commodities, certain commodities, because there are some moral conflicts with the attainment of certain commodities and how that is done environmentally, and then there's also the human factor, how the people in those industries are treated. Mr. Strauss should be calling any moment, and we'll have a discussion about the topic. My counsel.
Hi, Mike. This is Adam Strauss with Appleseed Capital.
Yeah, Adam, I've been expecting you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Now, my understanding is that you argue that commodity investing is fraught with certain environmental and perhaps human rights challenges for an investor who's trying to construct a socially responsible or ESG portfolio. Explain some of those pressure points.
Sure. Well, let's just think about all the commodities that are out there. You've got, you've got various metals that are out there, like copper and silver. You've got agricultural commodities that are out there. You've got other types of commodities, but in almost all cases, it gets pulled out of the ground. And because it gets pulled out of the ground, it's got particularly difficult environmental challenges, and in some cases, depending on what countries that commodity is being pulled out of the ground, there can also be human rights issues. So while all investors want to have exposure to commodity-related investments, if you are interested in considering environmental and social issues, as we are, you have to be thoughtful about how you actually invest in commodities, because it's just, to be honest, it's just fraught with problems.
It may offend your values.
Exactly.
Depending on what you're investing in. But let me give you a little scenario here. I was talking to a financial advisor the other day who said people have been calling her office saying, I want to get out of guns. I don't want any guns in my portfolio. And they're kind of at a loss, this particular RIA, because it's kind of like, well, what does that mean? You don't want to be invested in Walmart. You don't want to be invested in Amazon, because there's all these retailers that deal in guns. And even though Walmart has changed its policy to some degree, it doesn't sell the assault rifles anymore. It makes it very difficult. Commodities are used in all kinds of different things. I obviously, nobody's going to throw their smartphone out because there's a lithium battery in it, let's say. Just how far are people looking to go, or can an investment house go in terms of trying to make sure that they've got a really kind of airtight ESG portfolio with regard to commodities?
Right. Well, I mean, it's a great point that you just made, which is that, look, we live in the world, and it's hard to live in the world without consuming some kind of a commodity right now. I mean, we probably commuted to work in some way, shape, or form, and we use energy, which relies on commodities. I'm sitting in a building right now that's heated, and there were likely some sort of commodity that was involved either directly or indirectly in providing that heat, and so you can't avoid it altogether. But the point of trying to consider environmental and social and governance issues is really, it's almost like, how do we invest and leave the lightest footprint possible? It doesn't mean you don't leave a footprint, but it just means, trying to be trying to be thoughtful about some of these things. So, I mean, if you wanted to have a commodity-free portfolio with no whiff of commodity whatsoever, I don't know what company that you can invest in the modern age that has no direct or indirect exposure to commodities. So I think it's about trying to be thoughtful and trying to make investments in commodities that have some of the positive characteristics that commodities have, especially with regards to providing a hedge against inflation, but without most of the environmental and human rights consequences that a lot of the dirtier commodity-related investments might have.
So we make the biggest impact we can. As an example, I'm a vegetarian. Does it mean that I don't own any leather at all? Well, no. And of course, I rationalize it that an animal doesn't have to be slaughtered to have the leather. It can simply die of old age or whatever. We can't be 100% perfect with commodities. That's pretty clear. So let's talk about what's realistic. How does the ESG investor, I want to invest in commodities, I want an ESG portfolio, and I want, of course, a diverse portfolio. And especially now I want commodities because we, as an example, we have a column that's going in the magazine for April, Where to Invest in Times of Inflation, written by Greg Fisher over at Gerstein Fisher. And one of the points he made, looking historically, commodities do very well in times of high inflation. So I want that commodity representation in my portfolio in probably a more significant way right now since we're looking for a downturn. And I want it to be ESG. So long-winded question, long-winded way of saying, what kind of ESG commodity portfolio could I have without feeling ethically conflicted? What's possible?
Right. Okay. So I'll throw out a few different categories. First of all, you've got you could try to invest in some kind of a renewable natural resource company, and what I'm thinking about here is really trying to focus on a natural resource that doesn't get pulled out of the ground and is gone for good, but can grow back. And really, what I'm thinking about is sustainable timberland and sustainable farmland. So if you own an organic farm somewhere or some tract of timberland where that timber is being harvested in a sustainable manner. Now, those are difficult to do in a publicly traded portfolio. A lot of those kinds of investments are more on the small private side. There's also alternative energy companies such as wind or solar producers. So that's another way that some investors like to sort of invest in the rise in pricing of commodities because, let's face it, if oil prices go up, then it makes wind and solar a lot more attractive and a lot more profitable. And so so that's another way that some people invest. A third way would be alternative transportation companies. A lot of people are investing in electric vehicles these days, although I think the tie to commodities is a little bit less apparent than alternative energy. And then finally, one of our favorite ways is, we have a pretty large investment in gold, not gold miners, but gold. And we think that there's some pretty interesting characteristics about gold that make that an attractive investment for an ESG investor.
So talk about that a little bit, especially in light of the fact that gold's financial performance, it's not always the greatest financial performer. It goes up and down, but, everybody seems to want gold in their portfolio to some extent because they feel like if the whole economic system collapses, gold actually has value. So kind of wrap those two together. I mean, why do you like gold and what about the performance of gold?
Okay. Okay, sure. All right. Well, let me just start by talking about why we think about gold as an ESG investor. So, gold is obviously it's not renewable, right? So it's not in that category, and it also doesn't generate any kind of alternative energy, right? So it's not in that category either. But it's in its own category, and in a lot of respects, it is a unique commodity because as far as we can tell, it's the only recyclable commodity that exists on the planet. Almost every other commodity that is produced or pulled out of the ground is produced or pulled out of the ground in order to be consumed, either as food or as energy or as an input into some kind of industrial production process. Gold, however, is not consumed with any of those in any of those ways. Instead, it's purchased as a store of value, and then it's held by its owner for a period of time. And then when they're done with it, what do they do with it? They sell it to somebody else, who then in turn plans to hold it and own it until they sell it to somebody else. So that's why we call it sort of unique in that it's recyclable. It's all, it's all just sort of moving from one hand to another. And so because it's recyclable, there's this enormous stock to flow ratio. If you look at annual gold mining production, it represents only about 1 to 1.5% of all of the above ground stocks of gold. So in other words, when we buy gold in a vault, approximately 99% of it is coming from secondary sources, other gold investors or central banks or melted down jewelry, and only 1% of it is coming from gold production. And that just makes it like a completely different commodity than any other commodity. In our view, it makes it profoundly more light footprinted than any other commodity. Now, I'm not, that doesn't mean you should go invest in a gold miner, because now you have all of the natural resource, the environmental and human rights problems as any other producer. But I'm just talking about owning gold in a vault. I think that's what sort of makes gold interesting from an ESG standpoint. Now, gold's financial performance. If you look at gold since the temporary bottom that occurred in the depths of the financial crisis in October 2008, it bottomed right around $700 an ounce. So today it's about $1,325 an ounce. So it's almost doubled, representing a compound annual growth rate of somewhere around 7%. That said, like many other commodities, it has underperformed the S&P 500 index by a long shot since the financial crisis, and it's actually been down over the last 7 years, due largely to the fact that the dollar has been strong and deflation has been a much bigger concern than inflation. So, over the last 10 years, it's been okay, but not the best investments in the world. And especially since 2011, I would say it's been, pretty much a bad investment.
When you mentioned the 7% annual return or growth, you're talking about over the past 10 years. Is that correct, Adam?
Yeah, I'm saying it's been 9.5 years since October 2008 when it bottomed at $700 an ounce. It's $1,325 today. Point to point, that's about a 7% compound return.
So you also mentioned, it sounds like what you're saying is the gold that's there, the sins have been committed already in obtaining that gold. The gold is out there now. When you're investing in it, not mining for it, but investing in it, that doesn't have any environmental or human impact at that point, other than any good that it could do you. It's also fungible. I heard you talk about melting it down. So gold can take a variety of different shapes, it has industrial uses as well, is my understanding. I'm just looking for some confirmation from you on that, Adam.
There is some industrial use. I mean, I think I have a little bit of gold in one of my teeth. But it's as a percentage of what's used, it's just hardly material at all. I mean, the people own gold because of its value. Even if you own gold because it's jewelry, I mean, people own gold because of the value. It really is. I mean, compared to a lot of the other metals, its industrial uses are actually quite poor. Which is fine because gold. People don't own gold for its use in industry. They own it because it's pretty, it's rare, and it's valuable.
Mm. Now, let me ask you this: we hear all the time about huge oil reserves being found around the globe. Why are there never any enormous gold strikes? Why does the supply of gold remain so consistent? Is there never an enormous gold strike? And let's, if that was to happen, how would those dynamics work in terms of people who own gold and it as an investment product and whatnot?
Sure. Well, first of all, there have been huge new gold strikes, just not recently. When the New World was discovered, that was in effect a huge new gold strike for Europeans. When gold was found in California in 1849, that was a huge new gold strike, and both of those historical developments resulted in an enormous increase in the supply of gold. And I will tell you, those developments did not help the purchasing power of gold at all due to the surge of in supply that took place. You know, that said, 1849 was a long time ago. I just think it's extremely unlikely that an enormous gold strike will occur with the cost to extract that gold is lower than the current price. If the price was a lot higher, who knows? But I just think it's unlikely. And by the way, I think that same thing is true with a lot of the oil strikes that people are talking about. I mean, when people talk about oil under the Arctic or whatever, like that's not profitable to be. That's not profitable at current prices. That's something that people wouldn't bother looking for it unless you have a much, much higher price than where you are today.
Mm-hmm. So I assume gold is in your personal portfolio, Adam, and you have it there for a reason. What role does gold play in your portfolio?
Yeah, so, I think there's a lot of reasons to own gold right now. So let's start with just the fact that it's sort of a hedge. I mean, if you look at the gold price historically, it tends to perform in a way that's very uncorrelated to stock and bond returns. So if you combine it in a portfolio with a bunch of other different asset classes, gold's kind of unique, and in its uniqueness in the way that the price work, it reduces the overall volatility in your portfolio. So we think it's a really good diversifier. Now, I mean, the downside is when stocks are going straight up, owning gold is going to hold you back, which is sort of what we were talking about before. Like, the best thing to have done since the financial crisis is to just put 100% of your portfolio in the S&P 500 index. But where we are right now with the S&P 500, very expensive, with bond yields at all-time low, it probably makes sense to own some asset classes that act a little bit differently than stocks and bonds. And as an example of the sort of hedging use of gold, again, going back to 2008, if you look at the full year calendar 2008, almost every asset class went down in a fairly correlated way. There are two asset classes that I'm aware of that generated a positive return in calendar year 2008, and those two were U.S. Treasuries on the one hand and gold on the other. And so, it's sort of a good historical example of why it makes sense to own gold as a diversifier. The other reason to own gold is as an inflation hedge. hedge. I mean, we're particularly worried about the long-term value of the U.S. dollar. In our portfolios, we own a lot of dollar-denominated investments, and we see gold as a hedge against some of the losses that we could generate in purchasing power that could occur if the dollar depreciates, as it has, by the way, over the last 18 months or so. And we think that that's going to continue, probably not in a straight line, but we think over the next 5-10 years, we're going to see the dollar continue to depreciate for a few different reasons. First is that if you look at foreign central banks, they are no longer buying treasuries as foreign reserve holdings. Since 2014, foreign central bank treasury holdings has been completely flat. And so we think with less demand from central banks going forward, it's going to be hard for the dollar to not depreciate. Secondly, if you look at various monetary policymakers, they seem to be intent on keeping interest rates low enough so that real interest rates are negative in order to reflate the global economy and reduce the debt-to-GDP ratio over time. And then the third is President Trump, in particular, wants to depreciate the dollar in order to make U.S. manufacturing more competitive, bringing jobs back to some of these states that voted for him in the last election. So, I think those are all three reasons why, you know, we get a little bit nervous owning dollar-denominated investments. And I guess the final thing I'll just add is, you know, we're value investors, so we like to buy investments that we think are undervalued, and we think gold is a good example of an undervalued investment. And let me sort of explain sort of how we think about valuation of gold in broad strokes. In 1981, when gold hit a secular peak in price, the monetary value of the 8,000 tons of U.S. Treasury gold was more than 120% of the U.S. monetary supply. Today, that same U.S. Treasury gold is worth less than 10% of U.S. monetary supply. So we think beyond being a hedge and reducing portfolio volatility, there's just a lot of upside to get to some sort of a fair value for the gold price.
8,000 tons of gold held by the U.S. Treasury. And why do they hold gold? We don't have the gold standard anymore, Adam. Are you in favor of the gold standard and for the dollar? I mean, backing the dollar. And why does the Treasury have 8,000 tons of gold? Why does it need possession of that rather than putting it out on the market?
Yeah, well, so, you know, I guess I would say is I'm probably not in favor of the gold standard, but I also am not in the business of making investments behind what I believe or don't believe. I'm just trying to sort of predict where the, you know, what's going to happen in the future with the way that we invest. And so what I would say is it's not just the United States, but almost every central bank around the world owns gold. And what I would say is, since the financial crisis, central banks around the world have been net buyers of gold. So even at the same time where I said that central banks around the world have stopped buying treasuries, they have continued to buy gold. And the reason is that, you know, right now the world is sort of on a dollar standard, right? So everybody has owned dollars because that's how you trade. You know, even when the United States is not involved on one side of the trade, it's usually the dollar that's being used as the currency for those trades. But I think, you know, given the for a lot of reasons, I think that some countries are getting nervous about the dollar, and so they're buying gold. And it's also worth mentioning that, you know, that China is trying to increasingly use its currency and encouraging other countries to use its currency for foreign transactions. So, you know, if China is buying goods from Pakistan, and instead of paying for those transactions in dollars, they're paying for it in yuan, then that's going to reduce the demand for dollars as well. So, so for all those reasons, we think that the dollar is sort of likely to be used less as the world's reserve currency. It'll probably still be really important, but probably be used less so. And we think other currencies could end up being used more. And given the central bank buying of gold, it's very likely that gold could be one of those currencies that countries use.